We're taking you behind the scenes with entrepreneurs that run product-based businesses, people that were once in your shoes. Our TSBC alumni, speakers, and friends will shed light on growth strategies, resources, and inspiration to help you scale your creative business. Hey everyone, I'm Katie Hunt, the founder of Trade Show Bootcamp, and welcome to Proof to Product. On today's episode, I'm interviewing Bryn Chernoff, the owner, calligrapher, and creative director of Paperfinger. Bryn's work has been featured in numerous publications, including Martha Stewart Wedding, Martha Stewart Living, Real Simple, Esquire, and Brides, just to name a few. And she also teaches calligraphy workshops online through Skillshare, and she also does in-person programs across the country. During this episode, we talk about transitioning from a day job into your business full-time, finding your unique voice and point of view when you're creating your work, and we also talk about how business retreats are a great way to not only refuel, but to find clarity in your business. Hey, Bryn, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you, Katie. I'm excited about this.
I am too. It's been a while since I've had a chance to talk with you and hear how your business is doing, so I'm excited.
Me too.
So let's talk about how you got into calligraphy in the first place. What's your background there?
It started kind of subtly, like in the background of my life. I was in a totally different career path. I went to college for computer science, had like a technology / project management thing going on for the first 5 or so years, actually maybe even longer, 8 or so years out of college. And calligraphy or writing by hand or writing beautifully, that was something that just was like a part of what I like to do. I never even called it anything other than like, it wasn't even a formal hobby. I just always loved writing by hand. I loved filling out forms. I was like literally filling out my older sister's college applications, you know, when I was 12. Like, I just wanted to write. I wanted to fill in forms. It wasn't even a like a really profound artistic journey in the beginning. I just took so much pleasure from writing and wrote well, like really loved just using my handwriting in different ways or coming up with different styles. And then probably in my mid-20s-ish, I was doing it a little bit more for my own personal projects. I threw a birthday party and I hand illustrated the invitations on paper napkins and sent them out to friends and did things where my peers, my friends started to notice that that was something I was doing. Then there was that wave of friends that got married where it was like 8 weddings in 1 year. And a lot of them asked me to just do stuff as a friend. So meanwhile, I'm doing these projects like writing their place cards or designing their invitations at the end of my long days as a project manager. Like, was just ecstatic to be doing anything in this realm for free too. So it was by the end of that summer, I was getting all this good affirmation of my style, which was, you know, pretty modern and different from the kind of calligraphy I'd been used to seeing, and realized here I'm doing something for free when I have a really demanding other job that pays me okay. Like, what is this telling me? And I actually started doing The Artist's Way, which is a book you're probably familiar with. I really think it changed my life. Like, I don't say that too casually, but I was doing the morning pages of reflection every day for a year. And I feel like it allowed me to say, what I really most want to do is this writing and calligraphy. Like, that's what I think I'm not allowed to do. But I really, truly, if I am honest with myself, what I want to do. So I finally, like, said that out loud and cut back at my job to half-time. So for 1 year, I worked, you know, 2.5 days a week in this technology nonprofit, and then 2.5 days a week kind of inventing myself as a calligrapher, like building up a portfolio of work that was made up. It wasn't even real clients. Like, just tried to create work that I wanted to get hired for.
Okay, I want to, can I stop you for 1 second? This is amazing. So can I pick on your transition out of the day job a little bit more? Because I know this is an area that a lot of people struggle with. They're working intense jobs and they have a similar story of wanting that creative outlet, but wanting to transition it into a business. How was that conversation with your boss at the time asking to go part-time like that? Were they, I mean, they were receptive to it because it happened, but How did you approach that situation with them?
I think I had the benefit of burnout working for me. Like I was really burning out in that job, particularly. I'd been working just long, long hours. It was really hard work. And I kind of knew, like, I was at a breaking point anyway. I needed something fundamental to shift. So I think that stripped, like, the most scary part about that kind of conversation from the scenario. Cause I was just like, hey, I'm kind of falling apart a little bit. I need to make some big change. So I didn't see that it wasn't that there were tons of other options out there for me.
Right.
I was kind of like, all right, I got to try this out. And
when it sounds like you were willing to let it go completely, if you needed to or had to, if they came back and said, maybe it's all or nothing.
I wonder what I would have done if they had said, like, that's not an option. I had really developed a good relationship. It was a small organization. So I did have the benefit of, like, a personal relationship with my boss who knew me and understood, like, this needed to happen. And I feel really grateful because it actually made the experiment of paper finger really safe. Like I still have steady income coming in that would be enough to basically cover my expenses. Like if paper finger didn't go anywhere, I even, you know, I think if I had really begged to come back full time, like that would have still been an option. So I know that's kind of a rare, potentially rare scenario, but in general, I feel like every big ask I've made of employers and bosses in the past, like, has been a surprisingly good outcome. It maybe wasn't that I got everything I wanted, but like the power of the ask is like a motto, you know?
Yeah.
You never, ever know. And it's, you know, if you've been working somewhere for a while, people want to keep you. And I've seen that happen to a lot of friends and peers who were like, okay, I'm ready to like get out of here. And they're like, you know, your employer's like, can I just keep a little bit of you? So
yeah,
I think it's more possible than folks assume for themselves.
Thank you for sharing that, because I know for me personally, when I made the jump for my corporate gig, it was scary, and you weigh all these things and you try to prepare as best you can, both financially as well as mentally and all the other things that go into it. So it's great to hear your experience and that your note about the power of the ask. I love that, because I am a big believer too that if you're not willing to put yourself out there and ask for the things you want, the answer is always going to be no, right? And if you ask, it may be yes, or it might be an alternative that you hadn't even considered. So thank you for sharing that. That was awesome. So let's go back to you building your portfolio, and what you were starting to talk about was how you were trying to create work, the same type of work that you wanted to bring in. So can you talk about that a little bit more?
One thing that I didn't realize until later, and I went back to read my morning pages and journals from that early period of getting started with paper finger. And it was a completely anxiety ridden period, which I don't remember. I remember it nostalgically, like this moment of liberation, because I was finally doing what I wanted to do, but actually, it was terrifying and like just riddled with self-doubt. But I set a deadline with a friend to do a photo shoot that would then become my website. I knew I couldn't offer my services in any way unless I had a portfolio of work to show. That seemed really straightforward. And so the simple thing of asking a busy, talented photographer friend to do me the favor of photographing my portfolio meant I really had to get it done by that date. Like, I'm a big accountability person. If someone else is expecting it, I'll do it. And if it's just for me, it'll never happen.
Right.
That honestly, like, was kind of the fire under me to actually have work that I felt was good enough to photograph. And some of that work stayed on my website. It's still on there. It's like 8 years later. And I thought of, you know, for example, like some friends had gotten married the year before. I didn't design their actual invitation, but I designed an invite that I would have done for them if they'd asked. And that was like an illustration of Dumbo, Brooklyn. And I did the street, you know, where they got married. And it was that choosing either like real people to write, you know, my family members' names on envelopes, people that were kind of easy muses for me, that I felt like a genuine source of inspiration around ideas.
Yeah.
And then just that concept of like, unless you really want to get asked to do it, don't make that and put that up on your website.
Right. What you put out into the world should really reflect the type of work you want to be doing. I absolutely agree with that.
Totally. And it felt like, oh, I'm not cheating the system by making it felt like, oh, it was a fake portfolio, but it actually was, it was as genuine a portfolio as it is. No one had paid me to do any of that, but it was my work, so it counted.
But that's okay. It's your unique work. I mean, it's just like people doing, you know, the photo shoots and the styled shoots and things like that. You know, it's a make-believe wedding or event that they're doing that for, but it still should be added to their portfolio. So it sounds like it was a transition. It was something that you started as, you know, just pure interest in it and that you saw that there was potential in it to lead to a business. How have you built out your products and services with the skill set that you have?
It's been a couple, there's been sort of a few different approaches. The one that's been true from the very beginning is basically selling my time and energy on projects for clients. And so that's always like a core component, whether it's that I'm addressing envelopes or I'm designing invitation. When I started, it was so simple of like, I write by hand, you can hire me to do that. And then the first person that asked me to design their invitations and manage printing meant I needed to learn how to manage printing.
Yeah.
I feel like most things, those like fake it till you got it or whatever the expression is, like, I was terrified by that first one of just, you know, arranging the printing. And now that's like the bread and butter kind of service for me.
Mm-hmm.
So it started out in that singular format of me getting hired for weddings, events, stuff. And then it slowly got added on, often because somebody would ask for something that I hadn't done before. I feel like that's kind of the format.
Yeah.
I struggle with like that. I'd like to do more where I just manifest something I completely came up with on my own. But reality is, like, I often get more done if somebody's, you know, asked for it.
What if somebody comes and asks you for something that you're not comfortable doing, or it's really not an artistic direction you want to go in, or perhaps they come to you and say, hey, so-and-so did this, can you do something similar to it? Like, how do you deal with those tricky situations where it's somebody's coming to ask you for something, but you don't really feel that at your core it's the right thing for you to be working on?
Thankfully, that feels really uncomplicated now. I think I really wrestled with how to handle that early on because I wanted to be saying yes to everything. Mm-hmm. But now I really just respond truthfully and what feels authentically. Like, hey, that's a very distinct style. We offer this set of styles. Like, here's something that makes me think of that. But if you're really looking for that, I probably even know who did that, and here's their name. Right.
I can refer you. Yeah.
There's nothing in it for me. I feel like I've ruled out a lot of things that are not worth it at all anymore, which is like doing something that doesn't feel like it's coming from me or paper finger authentically. Mm-hmm. All of those things, I'm very happy to just say, oh yeah, that's not the right fit. Like, I mean, if you can notice those things up front, but it's really nice to feel like, about that point of like, yeah, I'm not going to stress it.
Well, that takes a while to get to, too. I remember at the beginning stages with Kelp Designs, my stationery brand, like I talked about this at Paper Camp, too. You know, the first time I went to a wholesale show, at the stationery show, for example, people come in and say, oh, I really like that pattern, but can I get it in green instead of blue? And I wanted to just say yes, yes, yes to everything because you're excited that they're interested and you want to be in their store or working with them. And the truth of the matter is, as we grow a little more seasoned in our business, we have better discretion as to the types of things that we want to do. And we also become more comfortable saying no to the things that aren't the best fit. So for anyone listening, I just want to tell you, like, if you're just starting out and there's things that you don't want to be doing in your business, find a way to say no, but in a way that truly articulates your why and gives them a reason behind it, I guess, is just my advice to people.
I think I totally agree. And I feel like whatever the core reason is usually really fair and okay. And it's for the client's best interest too.
Right.
Like I've been down the road with the client where we didn't really have the same thing in mind. And they weren't having a good experience either. So it's not like you're doing anyone a favor.
Right.
To try to meet, you know, sort of squeeze yourself into their.
That's a great point. If you're not passionate about it, it comes off in other ways aside from your art as well. So you do custom work still with weddings, and you also have some off-the-shelf products in your shop too, right? Don't you have some art prints and things like that?
I have some ready-made products like prints, and I've had a series of cards, greeting cards. Mm-hmm. I also do some custom-made products like address stamps. I do a lot these days of kind of just custom transcriptions. So
cool.
Whether it's for a gift or someone's vows or usually something they'll hang on the wall, you know, not really large format, but more like, you know, larger than a little card. And those are fun because they're really personal.
Awesome.
But straightforward.
And you've also started doing workshops, right? Can you tell us about those?
Yeah, I started teaching workshops even easily like 4 years ago, 5 years ago in New York. And I think with the increased interest in calligraphy, I've been getting a lot more requests for teaching. So there's been a couple ways I've been going about it. When I got pregnant, I realized it was kind of too much for me to travel and host workshops for a short time, like the first year or so. Hosting workshops is like physically and energetically really taxing for me. I'm also like an introverted calligrapher, so it's like a bit of a challenge, but they're fun, except I was looking for other ways to be furthering my teaching without actually having to like throw these mini parties every time.
Right.
So Skillshare approached me around that time, and I started recording a few courses for them, which was the best thing I added to my business, especially when I was approaching a maternity leave, because that was the first true passive income I had access to, and now continue to have that monthly sort of royalties from the courses that I teach there. And I've taught another class recently, and those are great because I pour a lot of energy into them. And then that curriculum is established. So when I do host in-person workshops now, I'm using a lot of the material that I put in for the Skillshare classes. Mm-hmm. So
that's awesome too, because it really opens up your teaching to an audience that may or may not be able to come in person, whether it's because of logistics of where the workshop is being hosted or perhaps the price. So having the online class really does introduce your stuff to a wider audience of people that you may not have otherwise reached.
Exactly. Access to a lot more people than I would have just, you know, there's like 15,000 people on the Skillshare.
Yeah.
In my Skillshare classes, and you know, I only teach like 12 to 15 usually in a small class.
Yeah.
And yeah, so teaching has been a product. I also experimented with, you know, having kind of like ready-made invitation designs.
Mm-hmm.
That was sort of one stumbling block that feels fine now, but felt a little awkward at the time, awkward and expensive. Was I thought I could launch this idea of my invitation collection that you would just order online. And I wanted to approach brides and, you know, clients, individuals directly, not do it wholesale, but just offer it like an easy, straightforward process to order online, even though it'd be custom written to
them. Mm-hmm. So it's semi-custom essentially, right? Because the framework of the invitation would be set, but then the details and their names, of course, would all change. But
yeah, exactly. So the art is done per, you know, made to order, but the design is set in stone, colors set in stone. And I thought it could be kind of a streamlined service where people would just pick it off my site, punch in their info, and they'd get, you know, beautiful invites returned. And I did that really in a bit of a vacuum of like my ideas, plotting it all out. I produced 5 suites, had them all printed, like actually did them for free for 5 different clients just to test it out. And never really got any feedback about whether that process would work for clients. Just kind of thought like, this will work. let me put a ton of energy and money into it. And it just never really went anywhere in that format. I still do that service. I still offer a collection, but I realized after some time that people still want a personal interaction if they're ordering something custom. Like if they want the kind of minted experience, like that's what they should be doing. If they're coming to a calligrapher, they want to actually get to like talk about it, even if they're choosing from a collection design. At least that was my learnings, at least for the folks that are coming my way.
Well, you're not alone in that, to be honest. I feel like we're seeing with the expansion of the online world, especially from marketing stuff, you are seeing that there's certain couples that will just, they want minted, they want wedding paper diva, like they want that less decisions, less expensive, off the shelf thing. But the people, then you've got the people that want super custom, right? They want to look at every nook and cranny and decide. I feel like there is that middle market of people that want, you know, a lower price point, but still the customized look, but it's a difficult market to tap. Have you had any more success with it as you've started to refine this program that you built?
Yeah, I think that basically just, I'm not trying to package it the same way.
Mm-hmm.
I'm treating it like I do any custom client. So if anyone comes to me for an invitation, I have a range of options. So if they want to spend less or they have less time, I have a collection they choose from. And they still get to sort of interact and talk about it and feel like they're having a personal experience, even though I'm not dreaming up a totally new design for them.
Right. Yeah.
That's worked well. I think it was this over fixation on my part of it, like the process being super streamlined.
It's the project manager in you.
Yeah, exactly. I was just like, let's build like an app, you know? And I was like, no, that's not actually what anyone else wants. So my big takeaway from that was to just get feedback. I think especially in sort of solo business world, it's really, especially if you kind of like, you know, most solo business owners like being the boss. So you like your ideas and you like that you get to make all the decisions. But I've really had to practice just like getting some more input, actually getting more perspectives on what I'm doing, because I think I can sort of get a little lost in my own little vacuum of ideas. And
well, as entrepreneurs too, we have so many different ideas, right? Like I have a hard time turning my brain off sometimes when it comes to this stuff. And I do think it's natural for us to think about how we would want to work through the process or how we would want to structure things, because we're also looking at it from a standpoint of running our own businesses. But you're right, getting that customer feedback and finding out how people would, you know, explaining what we want to do and hearing how they would want to get there, hearing how our clients would want to get to the end, it may be very different than what we are envisioning in our heads. So I agree with you that that process of getting the feedback is very important.
Yeah. All the sort of business material and theories around, like, what do they call it? The like flash startups, or basically like the whole business model of launching businesses and just like driving forward and testing it in beta and just going with it, instead of like tons of research and development and then finally the perfect launch date. And I felt like I heard about those concepts after I'd gone through this process with my collection. Was like, oh yeah, that would have worked better if I just like dove in a little bit and gotten live responses instead of investing a ton of energy before I got the feedback. So,
but like you said earlier, you know, it's live and learn. It's fake it till you make it. We're learning by trial and error. That's what entrepreneurship is. You know, I'm grateful for things like our bootcamp community, because we are able to leverage each other's experiences. And I think that there's going to be a lot of people hearing your story now that are going to be able to take what you've learned and maybe the pitfalls you encountered and apply that to their own business. So I think, you know, it's part of the journey. At least that's how I view it. But so, hey, a few years ago, I started doing solo retreats once or twice a year. This is kind of a time for me to step away from the day-to-day family life and my business life. And it was also a good time for me to do some self-care and really get some sleep too, because that's a huge commodity around here. I don't get much sleep with my four kiddos. So, and that's been a really impactful thing in my business. I'm able to, I usually go with a set agenda. agenda. I have specific goals I want to hit. I have specific things that I'm going to do on that retreat. And I know that you have been a big proponent of people doing these same types of retreats and that you're actually writing a book on the topic soon. So can you tell me a little bit about your philosophy around retreats and how you choose to structure them and what your goals are when you're working with people on doing these retreats?
Sure. I'll try to be concise about it because I have a lot to say. So I'll just try to go for the nuts and bolts. But I started very early on. I felt like just a deep craving for a pause on the daily grind, and that there were all these questions that I literally just couldn't answer for myself in the business unless I stepped out of the routine. Like, you can't just like pause in the middle of a really busy day where you're handling 10 different things and think deeply about like your goals for the year ahead. Like, it's just not possible. And I was craving an opportunity to do that. And I felt a little silly the first time. Like, I got, you know, my big like tear off whiteboard sheets, or like,
yeah,
went for 3 days to the beach in New Jersey, like literally talked out loud to myself, prompting questions like I had a group of people in the room, except it was just me. And it was so satisfying and so not a waste of time that I think I was immediately convinced that this would be an essential part of my practice. I wish I did it, you know, 3 times a year. Like, once a year is hard enough for me at this point. Mm-hmm. Like, parent life and just normal busyness.
Yeah.
And it always feels like, oh, is this an indulgent act? And it's, no matter how many times I've done it and been proven wrong in that idea, like, it's so useful. And I think it was such an awesome experience the first time and subsequent times to notice that I also had a lot of the answers. They weren't far away. It didn't mean I needed to dig and analyze tons of spreadsheets. Like, it was a chance for me to just make room to listen to some core truths. Like, some of them would be as simple as, like, I don't want to do logos anymore. Like, I remember, like, sitting on the beach. I think the ocean gives answers sometimes, like, in a little bit of a, just sort of a heady way. Like, I like water as a place to be around, you know, when you're trying to make bigger decisions, but just like letting myself be in this space of reflection about Paper Finger for 3 days straight meant like things just started kind of coming to the surface for me that I think were there, just I didn't give them any time. So it was simple things like, oh, you know, that's not part of what I want to be offering. Does it make sense? And it's not making me happy. Done.
Well, I have to go back to what you said about it feeling indulgent. I definitely dealt with a lot of mom guilt and wife guilt and all these things because, you know, I'm leaving my husband home with my 4 kids to go basically spend 2 or 3 nights at a hotel or somewhere else to focus on my business. But like you, and so it did feel very indulgent to me. It felt very like, oh gosh, like, is this being selfish? But I will tell you, like you said, I had the answers there. I just needed the quiet and I needed the time to get through. It wasn't even a to-do list necessarily. It was a think-through list is what I would call it. And the answers were right there. I just needed to not be in the day-to-day of my normal life. So I needed a pause, like you said, and you described it in such an eloquent way because I felt that same exact thing when I did my first retreat. It provided so much clarity for me and it gave me so much direction for that next, until I could get to that next retreat to kind of clear my head again.
Yeah, I have goosebumps. Like, I'm so glad. I feel like I wish I had more time to dedicate to the subject because I do feel passionate about it. I have a draft of a book that I need to go back to and keep working at. I did take a 2-week retreat to work on a book on retreats, which was an awesome experience. I got a grant and it was an incredible time to really dive into the subject. So I did a lot of research and that supported everything I thought already. So that was exciting. Yeah. And there's so many different ways to structure the time. I think the way you described it makes sense. Fundamentally, like, you know, kind of what are some looming questions or what feels kind of unresolved in your work. And so what helps most for me is just deciding in advance of the retreat, like the outline of what I will go over. It's less about like, make sure you cover this one subject, you know, mm-hmm. pick what feels important ahead of time, because it felt really nice every time to just be on a ride with my agenda, like to remove decision-making throughout the process of retreat felt important mm-hmm. and continues to, so that you can wake up in the morning and be like, oh, I guess today I'm starting with this one question and I'm going to do a brainstorming chart about it. And then mm-hmm. I break my retreats down really in lots of time chunks, like hour and a half is kind of like the max for any one segment. And then I have lots of breaks and treats and like one outdoor activity. I like to have one like icebreaker, which is like,
what do you do as an icebreaker for yourself?
So I'll like make myself go out to dinner alone or something.
Oh, that's good.
You know, like have a night where you like drink a couple glasses of wine and you know, walk on the beach or like do something that even is like the cliche of like a big corporate retreat where it's like, and you have to let loose, like treat yourself to like downtime and recharging, or it's like a massage mm-hmm. or whatever it is. I felt like all of that feeds the same overall goal and yeah. that sort of sacred space.
Well, and I think from my own experience, I come back not only feeling super empowered in my business and knowing what direction I want to take and feeling more confident in the decisions I'm making, but I also come back a better mom, if I'm being totally honest about it, because now I've dedicated that time to my business and now I feel like I can dedicate the next few days solely to my kids. And I feel like I'm more relaxed and I've recharged as a person too, because we're people and we normally leave ourselves to last, right? We put our families before us and we put our business before us. And so as a human being, you know, that time away and that rest time, in addition to working, really refuels me so that I feel like I'm a better business owner and a better wife and a better mom and, you know, all the things.
A better leader for anyone that works for you. I just feel yes. like I feel frustrated for, you know, I have a studio manager here and like, if I don't have clear direction about really like what our important priorities are, like that's just a frustrating context for her. And yeah, I completely agree. Like in a personal way as a mom, like it's so, I think it takes so little recharge to make a huge difference too.
Yeah. Absolutely. And two, like, I don't know about you, but like, I usually try to go only like an hour and a half away from where I live so that I'm not wasting time on the road. I try to use miles points where I can so that it's, or say it, you know, if a friend has a place that they're, you know, I can use, like, I try to do things inexpensively. To me, it's mostly just carving out the time. That's the biggest struggle of making sure everyone's okay for me to be gone. And
yeah. I mean, the last one I scheduled was, I ended up having to cancel last minute because of like mom stuff. So it's not like yeah. a foolproof situation, but I agree. Kind of even just committing to it as far in advance as possible. And now like my partner knows that this is something I do at least once a year, like yeah. get the team on board. It's always, yeah. you know, and it's like gives.
And two, if people that are listening aren't able to go away, you know, maybe you just block off an afternoon where you don't look at email and you don't pick up the phone, you know, you put your phone on do not disturb, like finding even a few hours or a block of the day to focus on you and think without distractions, it can make such a big impact in your business.
Yeah. 1 year I did it in New York where I was living, and my studio manager and I, at the time, we didn't have money to go on overnight, but we had 3 days where we didn't go into the studio. We worked one afternoon from the New York Public Library. We did like one brainstorming session down by the Williamsburg waterfront. We like went on a tour of like a couple key places. We had coffee with another business owner in a different industry who was inspiring. Like we kind of had an agenda that gave us that same feeling of removing ourselves from the daily routine. And we got to a waterfront, even if it was like in our backyards, essentially.
Right.
So I definitely don't think money needs to stop you. It's truly just that it's the condition too of being the business owner and like knowing that you're never done and that there's always more you should be doing, that it feels like, oh, how can I on top of all that then take this step outside of all those responsibilities? But I think it's sort of one of the premier responsibilities.
I think so too.
Doing your own thing. Like if you're not in touch with why you're doing it, like one of the main things I like to do is to stop and make myself examine, like, what is the point? Like what am I doing this for? You know, and it's could right. be like, because I love writing by hand or because I love managing my own hours, like, or because paper finger means this or that, like even pausing to remind yourself, like, why am I doing this? I don't, well, none mm-hmm. of us have to do exactly this. Like if, especially since we're in charge of it, we could stop at right. any time, you know?
Well, and I that's a great reminder to everybody too, myself included, because we get into these businesses for one reason and then, you know, it morphs over time as our circumstances change, as our life season changes. And I do the same thing with clients all the time of like, okay, let's get back to your fundamental why. Like, what is the goal of having this business? Is it that you want more flexibility? You want more time? Is it that you want to earn a ton of money? Like, what is the motivating force here? And of course, there's other things too, but what's the motivating force here? Because we need to make sure that all of your decisions you're making are driving back to that. And we also need to cut ourselves slack in that, like, if you started this business to have more time to do the things you want, whether it's family or personal things or whatever it is, you need to be making that time, right? Like you need to be making sure that you're getting the benefits of what you're working on. So I know it's hard. I know it's also like a mindset thing that we all go through as entrepreneurs. Like you said, there's always more that we can be doing and we put a lot of pressure on ourselves to ensure that we're continuing to do more. And I don't know, sometimes we just need to give ourselves permission to, you know, take those breaks. And so I love hearing about this retreat. I hope that you really do publish this book. I know you said you have it in draft form, but I want to encourage you to continue to write it and to release it because I think I would love to read it, but I know that a lot of people would benefit from it. You're doing a lot of amazing things with your retreats. And I know we've now segued off into a different direction with this interview a little bit, but it's an important aspect of running a business and being an entrepreneur and being a business owner. It's tough. And I think that the way you talk about retreats and the way that you've held your own, it's important. It's an important message for people to hear. So keep at it.
Yeah, we should all feel, I feel like a retreat seems like something reserved for a big company. And there's so much we need to do to allow ourselves to feel legitimate, even if you're one person, you know, it's still a business.
Yep.
Absolutely. So let's switch gears a little bit and talk about how you define success in your business. And I know this is something that changes over time with different life seasons again, but how do you define success in your business right now?
I mean, one thing is my happiness. And I know that that can connect to a lot of specifics, but I do really check in about how much joy I'm experiencing at work. Like, do I like it? Am I feeling good about going in every day to my studio? And that, what that adds up to, or whatever formula that is to lead to me feeling joy, changes year to year. But that's one barometer for me. The financial one is really hard for me to pinpoint. And it's an ongoing sort of, not wrestling match, but like an ongoing kind of kneading of the dough to like figure out what my financial goals are and how that's what mm-hmm. that relates to on success. I do feel like feeling pride about the kind of work that comes out of the studio, whether it's done by me. I also now have a small team of calligraphers that.
Oh, nice. I didn't realize that.
That's been one of the other biggest shifts that's happened over the last 2 years is I've grown it into a house of calligraphy, so I'm not the only one to do the jobs, and I have a few people in a few different locations. It's really helpful for on-site work in other cities or just purely to manage the number of client requests we get, and now we can take on more work,
right,
meet their needs. So feeling pride about the kind of work that's going out there makes me feel successful. These days, using my business for social good and social action has felt like a point of success. Like I've done a few fundraising efforts, thanks, like, or come up with some products that feel connected to social issues that are important to me right now. And certainly like flexibility. I feel like I'm winning at the being able to manage my life and time the way I'd like to. I mean, it's never like, oh, I feel like I could use 1,000 more hours every day, but I'm really grateful. Like yesterday, had to stay home with my sick toddler. Really so glad that there was no serious stress about that. I mean, I have a little more work to figure out where to do it later this week. You know, that's always like a reality, right. But no one I need to ask for permission. I love being the boss. Like
I do too.
It's, I don't think I could ever go back. Like,
I love that. I love being the boss. That might have to be a quotable from this episode. I think many of us can relate to that.
Yeah.
So what advice would you give to up and coming hand letters or people that are, you know, have a love for the art of calligraphy like you did, but they're interested in leveraging their talents for business use? Like, what would you tell them?
I feel like right now it's essential to distinguish yourself with unique work, that there's just a lot of overlap in the hand lettering and calligraphy world that I see that doesn't mean that there's, you know, some of it's all beautiful, but I think what really stands out now are people that find their own unique approach to it.
Mm-hmm.
I really admire and get excited by seeing people who are making something that looks new. And that's the whole point of modern calligraphy for me, like, is that you can come up with something you haven't seen before. So right. That sort of feels like paramount to really making your way forward as a hand letterer or a calligrapher. And thinking about kind of where it's going, which I don't have the answer to, but we're certainly in like a very, I don't know if it's like a calligraphy bubble, but like there's a big peak of interest. It's, you see it in a lot more marketing and advertising and branding. And I think it's going to shift in some way, like all things do. And sort of making sure that, you know, we kind of pay attention to the ways the market might change and mm-hmm. how our work can evolve. And respecting the work of other people out there, I feel like there's still a lot of, like in the stationery world, like a lot of copying simply, you know, and just that's not really the right way to go about it integrity wise. And so I really work with students on finding their own voice and making sure that if they are taking inspiration elsewhere, that like it's just inspiration, but not actually content.
That's great to hear. I know that is that's an issue that's constantly in the background, right? It's constantly, as newer people are coming into the industry, it's natural for them to look at what's been done ahead of them and to, you know, look to things for inspiration. But you're right, like finding their own voice and having their own authentic aesthetic for their products, whether it's hand lettering or stationery goods or even, you know, candles or other products, you know, you need to be bringing something different to the marketplace and standing on your own two feet too. So thank you for teaching your students that. I do the same. So it's important to me as well. So what is next for you and Paperfinger?
Well, I have a lot of ideas. It's that same thing of like, and when will I do them? Because my schedule fills up so much with client work. But I have some draft state products in the works on the calligraphy instruction side of things,
mm-hmm.
working on ways to take the curriculum that I have, not necessarily into book forms, but maybe workbooks or smaller format teaching nice. Materials that would be fun for folks as well as useful. The retreat book hopefully will come out into the world at some point. And even sharing more of the material online and building out a site just to have the content available as well.
Right.
And I also just have more stationery products that like I am excited to buy. I don't know if they're like big sellers and big money makers, but they're products I'm interested in and believe in and just kind of want to make for myself. So
mm-hmm.
I think that's always the seed of joy mixed along with like the practical steps forward in business is like, let me do one thing, you know, every 6 months that's just like a passion project. If it becomes something awesome and I make $1 million, great. But in the meantime, I'll also like just keep my steady client work going and invitations and stuff. So
that's awesome. And two, I love that you talked about the bread and butter work so that you can experiment with things that you want. I think that's a really important concept in business, that when you get something working and working right and working well, keep maintaining that so that you can kind of play around with some other things and see what you can bring into the fold. So awesome. Well, where can people find you online if they want to purchase your products or have you do hand lettering work for them? What's your website and where can they find you on social?
It's Paperfinger everywhere. Paperfinger.com, Paperfinger on social. It's all there. The shop, portfolio,
awesome.
All the content.
Well, thank you so much for joining me today. This was an awesome conversation. And I just enjoy hearing how you've pivoted in your business in different ways as you've gone along and the heart behind your business. It's very evident just in talking to you, but also in your products. You can totally tell that you love what you do and you're very good at it as well. So
thanks, Katie. I love
you. Of course.
All right, lady. Thank you for joining me today. It was a pleasure.
Same. Bye.
Hey friends, if you're thinking about wholesale and or trade shows in the near future, I highly recommend you check out our Paper Camp program. The next one's going to be in September and it's 2 amazing but intense days where we talk about how to ensure your product line is ready for wholesale, how to reach retail buyers, which sales tools you need to have and really how to create them, plus all the nitty gritty details that you need to know before you do a large wholesale show. We have a fantastic group of speakers joining us. They'll sit side by side with you during the program, and we even have time reserved for one-on-one sessions. Sarah from Constellation & Co. said that Paper Camp was pivotal for her business and the best money she's ever spent investing in herself and her business. When Lisa from Tiramisu Papery came to camp, she was already working with a handful of wholesale accounts. And after camp, she went home and put in the hard work and is now selling to over 120 stores and working with 2 sales reps. If you want to make transitions in your business or refine your current wholesale program, head over to tradeshowcamp.com/papercamp to register. And just so you know, seats are limited. We like to keep things small so that you get personal attention, and we also want to make sure that all of your questions are answered. So more information is available at tradeshowcamp.com, then click on Paper Camp, and we hope you'll join us. Proof to Product is brought to you by Trade Show Bootcamp and hosted by me, Katie Hunt. Since 2011, TSBC has worked with hundreds of product-based businesses to help them uplevel, scale, and build profitable, sustainable companies. You can find our show notes and additional resources at prooftoproduct.com. And if you like what you heard today, please head over to Apple Podcasts to leave a 5-star review and subscribe. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with a new episode.